When you were young, did you have a band you would freak out about? For thousands of Milwaukeeans, the meltdown comes on Tuesday when One Direction makes its Wisconsin debut at Miller Park. We'll have that and a story on how Marquette's basketball team is holding up on their overseas trip in this week's Behind the Headlines podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Many thanks for joining me this Sunday. For our first topic, we're taking a look at the latest Marquette University Law School poll numbers. For those who haven't heard of the poll before, it's a way to gauge election outcomes in the state. While we're certainly far away from the 2016 election, the numbers tend to be quite accurate, so many people pay attention to them. Mary Spicuzza covered the latest batch of poll numbers last week. The numbers showed Governor Scott Walker leading the GOP presidential primary field in his home state. But his job approval numbers have dipped, and he's trailing Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton. That wasn't the only story to come from the poll results. There were also results about the Ron Johnson versus Russ Feingold rematch. Here's Bill Glauber talking to Mary Spicuzza about those results and more.
This is Bill Glauber with Mary Spicuzza, and we're talking about the Marquette University Law School poll that was released last week. And there were interesting numbers in a number of different races, but we're going to focus on the probable U.S. Senate matchup between Democrat Russ Feingold and Republican incumbent Ron Johnson, a rematch from their last race. Mary, what did the numbers tell us?
So the numbers told us, the poll was released on Thursday, and we saw Russ Feingold's lead in the poll cut in more than half. He's only leading by about 5 percentage points now, whereas last time he had a lead of more than 10. So that tells us that the race is tightening, and that also tells us that people are probably paying more attention and operatives are paying more attention. We've seen quite a few attacks on Feingold that, and I think that it's really ramping up already.
Let's go behind the headlines. As journalists, we get a lot of polls. What do we do with them? How do you take apart these polls and rate them in importance? And how do you write about them?
There are a few things I like about the Marquette poll. I like that they don't do auto-calling, that they actually have a human asking the questions, that they call landlines and cell phones to get a good range of people like me who don't have a landline anymore. You got to take them with a grain of salt. I mean, we are talking about an election that is over a year away. It's summertime in 2015. A lot of people aren't paying that close of attention to what's going to be happening in November 2016. So you really can't get too worked up about the polls. But we have seen a lot of Marquette polls have been really pretty accurate when it comes to what we see in the election turnout.
Mary, you cover a lot of different subjects. You're a fast-moving reporter. Politics, though, does seem to be a specialty. How long have you been covering it? And what do you like about covering politics?
You know, it's funny. I had never really covered politics full-time until 2009, and I moved back to Wisconsin, largely because my father was sick, and I thought, like, well, this will be a good quiet 9-to-5 job so I can take care of my dad in his later years. And it has not been that, but it's actually been far more interesting and exciting than I imagined. And being able to cover, like, the protests in 2011 is, like, a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I think that I like that politics is not just, it's not just 9-to-5. It's not just, you know, buttoned up. There's so much crazy stuff that happens at the state capitol. There is never a shortage of things to write about.
If you're interested in finding out more about the polls or reading more of Mary's work, you can find it online at jsonline.com/politics. Many people have a band or actor that they would freak out about when they were young. For me, it was Jonathan Taylor Thomas from TV's Home Improvement. And for many in today's younger generation, the boy band One Direction fills that role. Although member Harry Styles is a Green Bay Packers fan, the band has never come to Wisconsin before. Their first ever show in the state comes on Tuesday, and many fans can't wait. Here's Marianne Reynaud talking to music writer Piette Levy.
The ones that stand out, I mean, I will say, I think the ones that we selected are the ones that have the most interesting stories. So there's 9 in this feature story. There's one girl who, there was a One Direction promo at Office Depot. Her name's Elisa Haglin. She's from Brookfield. And a couple summers ago, she would go into that store every week to the point that everyone in the store knew her name, and she would take pictures with the One Direction mural, and then they did, like, a bidding for it, and she won the mural, and she has it in her room. It's just, like, apparently it's just gigantic and covers her whole bedroom wall. There's this girl named Jamie Cry, who's 16, from Burlington. She saw them at Soldier Field last year, and her uncle posted her reaction video on YouTube. And it's, even by One Direction standards, it's crazy. Like, I mean, her bug-eyed expression, when she screams, it's, like, seriously at the top of her lungs. The camera is, like, shaking extremely violently. Like, you know, like there's, like, an earthquake going on or something. But no, it's just One Direction's getting on the stage. So she's really passionate. And then there was this girl who actually took a cardboard cutout of Harry Styles to homecoming with her as her date. Apparently no other guy was going to do. And, you know, she, not only that, but her name's Courtney Dreher from Waukesha. And she also took, you know, last year she would take Styles to, like, Bath and Body Works and have him pose by soaps. And she just seems really kind of weird, but really funny. And her friends were all into it too. And that's really funny. And then I want to say too, there's one story that I thought was really, you know, of the nine stories, this one I thought was the most interesting. There's this girl named Elena Hartzim, I think is how you pronounce her last name. She lives in Mequon. Really huge One Direction fan. And her mom was going to buy tickets for her and her sisters to see them at Miller Park on Tuesday. And the tickets were each, like, going to be about, like, $120. Well, Elena, that wasn't good enough. She's 15. That wasn't good enough. She wanted to be, like, in the first few rows. So she's like, can we just get a ticket there? And the mom's like, how much is that? And she's like, $850. And the mom's like, absolutely not. If you're going to try to see them there, you need to find the money. So the girl was kind of worried and wigging out about this. The tickets went on sale last December. She didn't know how she can get that much money before the show coming Tuesday. So she ended up getting a job at a pizza place in Mequon, and she spent, like, all her Friday and Saturday nights, you know, bussing tables and cleaning dishes and, you know, just working. And between the money she made there, tip money, she also had some allowance money, and then her mom also chipped in what she would have paid for that one ticket. She was able to get two tickets in the fifth row for One Direction, which I thought was really crazy, like, really cool to see that, like, a 14-year-old girl was that big of a fan that she stayed dedicated to this job for 6 months and worked to be able to see them in the fifth row when she could have seen them, you know, without having to do any work. She could have just seen them up in the, you know, in the $100 section, but she was that dedicated of a fan that she worked for. I thought that was really cool to see a 14-year-old girl have that discipline.
How did you put out a call to One Direction fans, and what kind of response did you get?
Well, you know, we were trying to figure out, Katie O'Connell and I, who helps to oversee the music coverage, we're trying to figure out how to do... We wanted to definitely do some sort of advanced story on One Direction, and the story of One Direction, to me, is really the story of the fans, because the fans are so huge. There's so many of them, and they're so passionate about it. And the band is the top... Last year was the top grossing band, touring band in the world. So we really wanted to do kind of a story on fans. So we posted a note on our site, like, on a Friday afternoon, and we did, like one Facebook post, one Twitter, you know, tweet or something. And, you know, I thought, oh, I hope we'll get enough people. I hope they'll be interesting enough. And I got, like, swarmed with, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of emails from all of them extremely passionate. There were probably about a bazillion exclamation points in each email. You know, these are... One Direction has some seriously, seriously dedicated and passionate fans in Milwaukee. And I knew that they did, but I was kind of surprised by how intense it was.
Did you get any male responses? Because it sounds like it was overwhelmingly female.
No male responses.
None?
Yeah, not a single guy reached out to me about One Direction. All ladies. Yeah, I mean... I'm sure there are male One Direction fans out there. I don't mind them myself. I'm definitely not, like, a super fan. I'm looking forward to seeing them for the first time at Miller Park. But yeah, no dudes. Although one father told me that, you know, Tim Michalski, is his name. When they went to go see One Direction at Soldier Field, it took him, like, almost an hour to find a men's bathroom because, there were so many women at the stadium that they converted all the men's restrooms into women's restrooms. So there's probably, like, one men's restroom in the entire football stadium. And he was, like, going everywhere just trying to find, like, the one men's restroom. And it took him, like, an hour. So any guys going, give yourself plenty of time to find a bathroom, although maybe you wouldn't mind stepping away from the madness for a full hour to find a restroom.
Sadly, I can't play a sample of the band's music for you. You can blame that one on copyright laws. Although if you are interested in listening to them, you can always find them on Spotify. And if you want to find out more about their fans, visit tapmilwaukee.com. We'll also have reviews and photos of the show posted there afterwards, so be sure to check back later this week. What does a new dean mean for Marquette's business school? Brian Till started in that position just a few short weeks ago. Business reporter Paul Gores talked to him about his vision for the school and the upcoming changes to it.
I have a story Sunday on Brian Till. He's the new dean of the business school at Marquette University. Comes here from Xavier in Cincinnati, which is another Jesuit institution, and started in July, so he's been here just about a month. In the story I'll talk about, he hasn't even had a chance to do much yet. He's mostly just kind of meeting people and finding his way around the campus and meeting everybody. Just started to meet people in the business community, and I was told by the people who hired him that that's one of his strengths, that he's really good working with the local business community.
Does he have any changes in mind for the College of Business?
A couple of them he mentioned. One of them is real big. He thinks, and so do some other people at Marquette, that they need a new business school, a new facility. The one they're working out of now is built in 1950. And he said it has a very old feel to it, and when you're competing with high school kids coming in on campus tours, and they go to other schools that have nicer, newer ones, makes it a little tougher to compete. The other thing he mentioned is he wants to use technology a little bit more on the campus, using something called a flipped classroom, which is where the students see the professor do the lecture ahead of time, then come in and do a little more hands-on and dig deeper into the subject when they come into class.
When you go in and you're preparing to do a profile, what are some of the steps you take, or what's some of the research that you do?
Knowing I was going in to meet him, I read as much as I could about him from his bio and where he'd been before. He's also written a book he's an expert in marketing, and he's written a book on the topic. So I looked into that a little bit, just kind of familiarize myself with his where he's been and what he's done and what some of his philosophies are. And then I go in and write down maybe the 10 questions I want, make sure I want to ask him and not forget, write those down, and then just let the conversation go where it goes from there.
Paul's story will run in Sunday's edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you can't find it there, you can also find it online at jsonline.com/business. Speaking of Marquette, our own Matt Montgomery talked to Marquette basketball beat writer Matt Velasquez about the team's overseas trip.
I'm joined now by Marquette basketball beat writer Matt Velasquez. Matt, Marquette has played 4 games in 10 days against professional European teams overseas. How do trips like these happen?
You know, college basketball teams can take these trips every 4 years, and teams like to utilize them, especially when they have a young team like Marquette does, so that they can get a little bit more experience and get extra practice time. When you go on a trip of this nature, you get 10 extra practice days before you go, and then you get access to the team during that trip. You get to play professional or college-level competition that you wouldn't be able to play otherwise. And so it's an extra bit of experience before the season gets going. And like I said, with Marquette being so young, this is a chance for the 6 new faces on the team to get to play with the guys who've been there before, which is only 4 guys who are returning. So that's a big boost for them.
Once again, I'm joined by Marquette basketball beat writer Matt Velasquez. Matt, how did Marquette play in those games?
They started off a little rusty, as you would expect. They had an 89-82 win over Hakkar basketball, a team from Iceland. But after that, things really heated up, and they got some really good results. They won by double digits each of the next 3 games. The level of competition that you play in Europe can be a little hit or miss. But overall, it's mostly about what Marquette was doing. That's really what they were focused on. Since they don't really know who they're playing or what the level of competition is going to be, they really focus on getting their team together, figuring out who they are and how all the pieces fit together. And so scoring, over 100 points a game in those 6 games, but only allowing about 77, you know, that's a little high in terms of points allowed, but also they're not going to score 106 points, you know, per game in the regular season. So it's good to kind of work out those kinks and get some offense in and work on your defense too.
Which players stood out to you?
You know, this is the first time that anyone got to see, you know, any of the team's freshmen in, you know, Golden Eagles uniforms. So obviously Henry Ellenson is a well-known player, a very highly touted prospect. He was ranked in the top 10 by ESPN among recruits in the country. And, you know, he lived up to the hype. He scored over 20 points a game, pulled down about 8 rebounds, you know, demonstrated his versatility, his ability to shoot the three-pointer, push the ball in transition, you know, right after a rebound, which is a pretty great attack strategy when you're 6'10". But then also, you know, Tracy Carter, a freshman point guard from Philadelphia, he really had a breakout trip. You know, he really did a lot of everything, scoring in double figures on average, and also getting about 6 rebounds, 5 steals per game, or 3 steals per game, 5 assists. So he really, you know, lit up the stat sheet. He hustled all over the court. He was one of those players who wasn't as highly, you know, touted in terms of recruits because he had an injury the summer before he was recruited, and so a lot of people didn't know what the story was with him. And he really, really proved himself to be, you know, more than adequate as a college point guard. And then the other two players who really stood out were Dwayne Wilson and Luke Fisher, who are both returning, 2 of the 4 who are coming back to the team from last year. They both did exactly what you would expect. They performed better than last season, improved their numbers, demonstrated leadership. And that was an especially important thing for Luke Fisher, too, because he was coming off shoulder surgery in March. So being able to play well and then play physically without a shoulder brace on after that surgery was a very important thing for him.
Marquette's season doesn't start until November. What happens between now and then?
Once the team got back on Thursday, they all went their separate ways. They don't have any practices now until the season starts, until all NCAA teams are allowed to practice in October. So they all went back to their own hometowns, or some of them stayed here in Milwaukee, and they're just getting ready for the season. You know, one of the things to keep an eye on between now and the start of the season, too, is freshman Keith Cheatham. He wasn't able to play on the trip. He was able to go to Italy and Switzerland with the team, but he couldn't play in the games because he had not yet been cleared by the NCAA. And that doesn't mean that there's necessarily anything wrong or that there are any possible infractions. That's not neither here nor there. It's just that there's a certain number there's certain paperwork that needs to get filled out and processed in a certain amount of time. And with Marquette going on that trip, you know, they needed it done early, and it just so happened that his did not get processed in time and was not going to get processed in time. So that'll be interesting to see when it gets processed. There have been situations in the past at Marquette with Lazar Hayward and other schools where that processing didn't take place until very close to the season, or sometimes even into the season. So it'll be very interesting to see when that paperwork gets processed and when Cheatham can play for the first time with his teammates.
You can follow Matt Velasquez on Twitter at Matt_Velasquez. You can read his reporting at jsonline.com/Golden Eagles. And in the print edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Matt, thanks again for your time.
All right, thank you.
And with that, we're wrapping up another episode of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Behind the Headlines podcast. If you'd like to keep tabs on our show, be sure to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And we'll catch you next week.